Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Child Protection in Sport Unit. We're part of the NSPCC and funded by UK Sports Councils. Our work supports organisations to safeguard all children taking part in sport.
In this series, we'll be talking about disordered eating and eating disorders in sport. This content may be sensitive to some individuals. If you need further support or know someone who might need support, we've included links to organisations that can support you on our website at thecpsu.org. Hi, I'm Carol Billington-Wood, and today I'm being joined by Carolyn Plateau, a lecturer in psychology at Loughborough University. This minicast will explore when eating disorders and disorders eating can occur and discuss risky periods for athletes and those involved in sport. So Carolyn, the first question is, when might an eating disorder and disordered eating occur?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think with a very kind of broad brush, anytime, I think it's not just these disorders are not just restricted to certain people at certain times. They are more common in certain sections of the population. And I think that's worth being aware of. But people can develop eating disorders very young, and they can also develop eating disorders later on in life. So yes, anytime is a very broad response. What we do know from the literature is that adolescents seem to be particularly at risk of developing an eating disorder. So any time between kind of age 11 and age 16, 17 is considered a quite risky period for the development of eating problems. And that often coincides with puberty, with changes to the body, perhaps with transitions that occur, whether that's with schooling or other things that are going on in a young person's life, developing their identity, developing their kind of place within the world. So broadly speaking, we know that adolescence is a risky time period, and that's usually because of the bodily changes that are happening as a result of puberty and things. When we're thinking about this in the context of sport, when we're working with younger people, with younger adolescents, it's worth being conscious of that, and being conscious that particularly in sports where early sport specialisation is common, perhaps in things like gymnastics or where people join sport very early, that transition often happens whilst they're developing as an athlete, as well as developing as a person, as a young adolescent. So being aware of those additional pressures, and perhaps that this risky time frame, is important to help support athletes through those processes. Triggers, there are also kind of situations where obviously in sport particularly we know might be linked to the development of eating problems. So for example, where an athlete's training or it is disrupted, whether that's perhaps as a result of injury or something like that, can often be quite difficult periods for athletes in terms of managing that, whether it's because they have to have a long time out of the sport, they're unable to compete. That's quite often quite difficult for people to deal with. And sometimes people can go on and develop disturbed relationships with food as a result of those kind of triggering situations or those difficult situations. And similarly, where an athlete might be going through poor performance, they could also be look for ways to kind of perhaps change their performance, and that again could be for some individuals an opportunity to try and make changes to their weight and shape, or to manage their weight and shape more effectively.
It's interesting when you talk about the adolescent development, and I think that age group that you mentioned, the 11 to 16 year olds, and you think about youth sport and the masses of young people participating, I think it's got implications for everybody involved in youth sport. It'd be helpful to try and understand, again, are there certain athletes that are at risk? You know, would you say which athletes are at risk?
Yeah, and again, I think this goes back to my earlier point that anyone can develop an eating problem. It doesn't have to, it doesn't just happen in certain athletes, in females, in certain sports. It happens, people can develop these regardless of sex, regardless of sport involvement. But there are, again, the literature does tell us that there are some groups of athletes who are more at risk than others. So again, for people working within those sports, it's useful to be cognizant of that and being aware that actually the athletes that you work with may be at an increased risk in compared to other sports. So typically, again, as I've said, females, adolescents would generally present with the highest risk, and then those competing in things like lean sports. So lean sports are typically those sports where perhaps weight might be more closely related to performance than other sports. So good examples might be sports where there's perhaps an emphasis on appearance, so things like figure skating, gymnastics, perhaps where there's a subjective element to performance rather than just kind of first past the post, where there's an element of judgment on appearance and body shape and things that comes in there. And then things like endurance sports, often we see higher levels of eating problems in those sports because people there's an assumption sometimes within those environments that being of a particular body size or shape is related to improved performance. So often being lighter is assumed to equate to being faster. And then the last kind of category within this kind of lean sports groups are those kind of weight making sports. So sports where there are rules or there's categories within which athletes need to fit in order to be able to compete, that often creates an environment where there is quite a heavy emphasis on meeting weight criteria, monitoring weight, and those in itself can contribute towards a greater emphasis on weight and shape within those environments. So we do tend to see elevated levels of disordered eating and clinical eating disorders amongst those categories of sports, but as I've said, it's not to say that those issues can't happen in ball sports, in all, you know, in other sports where there's perhaps less of an emphasis on weight and shape.
That's great. I think there was two things I really picked up on there, and it could just to explore a little bit. We're thinking about that sort of the risk factors, and I think one of the things we know is that certain groups like talented and elite athletes we recognize can be additionally vulnerable to all forms of abuse, and we work with sports organizations to help identify some of those risk factors. So I think that came out quite clearly, because I think one of the things we know is that athletes have a really strong athletic identity. So, you know, their whole identity is tied up with me being an athlete and being a performer, can really be at risk when that gets disrupted. As you said, it could be through injury, it could be for lots of factors, they've been dropped from a program, or they, you know, they're approaching retirement. And so we recognize that as a really risky period often with those athletes who have that such a strong identity. And I think there's a real link there, isn't it, with what you were saying around athletes who may be at risk.
Yeah, definitely. I think those who, as I said, when that gets disrupted in particular, whether that's through poor performance or injury or change in selection or retirement, those are typically risky periods for eating problems, but also risky period for broader mental health issues as well. So, you know, the occurrence of depression and anxiety we know happens more amongst those people when they experience some kind of change or trigger that can disrupt that sense of self or sense of identity.
Yeah. The second thing I picked up was, I think you talked about assumptions and people making assumptions about sort of an ideal body size or shape in particular sports, and I found that really interesting, because I think sometimes that can link to a language or almost a way of speaking in a certain environment that I guess can be quite negative sometimes, and it feels like it is often based on an assumption about what somebody should look like in a sport or an athlete should look like. So I found that quite an interesting point, Carolyn, and that, you know, can I guess create a risk, can't it?
Yeah, I think it's easy to get caught up in stereotypes, whether those stereotypes have come from the elite end or whether they've just been developed by our own views and kind of exposures over time, or what the media has told us equals good or fast or you know, strongest. I think, people can, it can be easy to assume that if someone fits the mold that there isn't an issue, and if someone doesn't fit the mold then there might be an issue, when actually eating disorders in particular come in all shapes and sizes. You know, there isn't necessarily one profile of an athlete that would indicate an eating problem, and just because they do or don't fit perhaps some of those assumptions around what is or isn't expected within your sport doesn't necessarily mean that a problem doesn't exist. And I think it's up to those of us working within the sporting environment to be cognizant of that, and to be aware that actually, you know, how people present on the surface is not necessarily indicative of their psychological well-being or whether or not they might be struggling. And, you know, a bit of a call to action for everybody in terms of not necessarily forcing but encouraging some of those stereotypes, whether that's consciously or unconsciously. We might be biased towards athletes who present in a certain way, when actually equally talented individuals can present with an entirely different body size and shape, and particularly important when we're thinking about adolescents who are still growing, still developing, still changing in their body size and shape, are getting used to their extending limbs and changing power and strength, and it's not obviously until athletes become adults and kind of fully fledged athletes that we can really start to understand their capabilities and their talents.
Absolutely. I think some really important messages right through from grassroots, but particularly to that sort of talent identification process, and looking at adolescents maybe you develop quite early, and then I guess some of the longer term effects of if you think, you know, you identify somebody very early just because they're physically much more developed at that young age. And so I guess we've seen some of the impacts on young people in things like football academies, where they've been identified really, really early, and then maybe their growth spurt has slowed down. And I think that, as you say, it's having sort of awareness and being cognizant of those issues, particularly around that you know, critical sort of age of puberty when you know growth is quite sporadic in terms of comparing people who may be the same chronological age but developmentally very, very different.
Yeah, and it goes back to what I said around, you know, early sport specialization and this tendency sometimes to professionalize sport at a very young age before we really understand about the potential of the athletes. And you know, being dropped from programs or being dropped from academies can be very difficult experiences for young people, particularly if they've been told that they're talented and that, you know, they're going to make it as an elite or as a professional athlete one day. So we just need to be mindful of some of the challenges that we're, or the pressures that we put on young people at that age, and the level of scrutiny that's being applied, particularly to their body and their size and their shape and their weight at that point, because they will need to still navigate all of those changes around puberty, and we know that that's a risky period for the development of some of these issues.
Great, thanks for explaining that, Karen, and it's been really helpful looking at sort of transition processes, so thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this Child Protection in Sport Unit podcast. If you're looking for more information and resources on safeguarding children in sport, please visit our website at thecpsu.org.uk.